We are continuing our discussion of moral and ethical dilemmas that arose during the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And the way that we think about them as religious Jews, as, I guess we would call it, halachic observant reflectors or observers on these situations, is that we're going to use our tradition and traditional texts as the way of shaping our perspectives on these kinds of questions. So last time we talked about the terrible dilemma regarding handing over individuals to Germans. This time we're going to talk about another type of dilemma, which has actually quite a few practical contemporary applications, but of course in its most extreme form was extremely common in the Holocaust. It was this issue, this dilemma, which we're going to explore, happened on an ongoing regular basis. Now we're going to highlight it, we're going to sharpen it with one episode, and this episode involved Rabbi Ephraim Oshry, who we've talked about in the past, this Lithuanian rabbi who was not just himself a young rabbi, but was also an understudy of some of the greatest rabbinic luminaries, Rabbi Avraham Dov Ber Kahana of Kovno before the Holocaust. And he was approached in the early summer of 1941 by a man by the name of Rabbi Avraham Grudzinski. I don't know if he was related to Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, a man we've talked about many times from Vilna. Rav Avram Grudzinski, Hashem Yikom Domo Zechuso Lenu, he was the menahel, the administrator of the Slabodka Yeshiva. Slabodka was a prominent Lithuanian yeshiva, small town, many, many important students. Most of them, unfortunately, did not survive, but a handful of them did. And Rabbi Oshry describes that as a young man, he was summoned by Rabbi Grudzinski to take on a mission. He was asked to go to speak to a man by the name of Rabbi David Itzkovitz. This Rabbi Itzkovitz was the secretary of the Aguras Yisrael organization, and he had relationships with different local officials. Now, Rabbi Oshry points out, and this is discussed at greater length in a different context, he points out that the Lithuanian collaborators were very eager to participate in the German anti-Jewish persecution when the Germans rolled in 1941. So much so that they got in on the act of catching Jews and handing them over, and this became an activity. So Rabbi Grudzinski said to Rabbi Oshry, who was a young man at the time, he said, I'd like you to go find and speak to this Mr. Itzkowitz. And we'd like to ask on behalf of the community that Mr. Itzkowitz go find people he knows in the Lithuanian government and the people who are involved and advocate on behalf for the students, the rabbinical students in the Slabodka Yeshiva, that they should be released by the Lithuanian thugs. So this mission that Rabbi Oshry undertook raised the core question that we're going to focus on today, which is it actually permitted for Mr. Itzkowitz to find, to seek out, and to advocate with Lithuanian thugs and government, whoever, hooligans, whoever they are, because by doing that, he puts himself at risk. By trying to speak up, he becomes potentially a target. And this question is the central halachic question that revolves around so much of the issue of rescue during the Holocaust. Many of the cases of the rescuers were not Jewish, so they're not looking to the halacha for an answer. But any time anyone did anything to aid and abet Jews, they were obviously putting themselves at risk. And it wasn't just a small risk. This is what we call pikuach nefesh, life-threatening risks. And we all are familiar through our studies of people who unfortunately were picked up by the Gestapo because of their activities, and they were either, Rachmana Litzlan, executed, or even worse, they were tortured, and then they were executed. So this type of activity is a question. And what we need to explore together, just very briefly, in this survey, we're not going to get into all the details, is it permitted for a person to endanger themselves to save the lives of someone else? Is it obligatory or is it prohibited? You have three options. Three options. And lest you say that this is just academic and theoretical, the place where this question lands on a contemporary basis is in a very different context, but is important to consider. The excellent synopsis, not that he needs my approbation, but Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the late chief rabbi, the Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel, has several collections of responsa, thousands and thousands of letters that he wrote and answered to people. And this collection of responsa is actually from a radio program that he used to do every week, where he would receive a question, and on the radio he would give the insight, the answer, based on his encyclopedic photographic memory. So this is the third volume of his responsa called Yechav Adas, where he was asked about kidney donation.
About what?
Kidney donation.
Ah, yes.
So here you have a similar type of question. Oftentimes, a person who is in need, Rachmana Litzlan, of a kidney donation is facing a very serious prognosis. He needs a kidney donation, this person, he or she, because their life is threatened. But there are also potential risks involved in the person who's giving the kidney. So is it permitted to put your own life at risk for the sake of someone else's health, to save somebody else's life? Now you might be thinking, wait a second, there's another wrinkle of this question, which is literally, in Hebrew you would say, omed ala perek, it's literally the issue at hand. Today, you have many people, some of whom we know, some of whom are related to people in this room, who are volunteering to put their life at risk and fight for the Israeli army. There's a young man who, I mean, there are many people like this, but there was a young man from Maryland, not far from where I grew up, I think it's Potomac is where his parents live, who made Aliyah as a lone soldier and volunteered and was here for Sukkot, and he went back to Israel because he felt an opportunity and obligation to fight. And unfortunately, he was in his service on the northern border, and he was killed by a missile from Hezbollah. Yimach Shemam v'zichram. So here's a man, a young man, who didn't even, from an army standpoint, have an obligation to go back because he was in America. So this question of enlisting and volunteering, which is happening all the time right now, is a different question. Why is that? Because that is in a different set of rabbinic regulations, you could call them, principles, because it's all within a giant halachic umbrella called milchama, war. And already a few hundred years ago, Rav Yosef Babad, one of the great European Torah luminaries, pointed out that the fact that the Torah allows and sometimes requires that the Jewish people form an army and go out to battle, as is evident many times in the Torah, in the Chumash, in the Nevi'im. You're good, right there. It must be, the Minchas Chinuch, Rav Yosef Babad points out, it must be that that is a rule breaker. The definition of war is that somebody's going to put their life at risk. So the questions that we want to think about in this issue, these two competing values are, is it appropriate, obligatory for someone to risk their life, or is it not? What are the different factors that the rabbinic community, that Jews through a religious and spiritual lens, are going to think about to weigh this ethical question? Because on what other grounds, how else, without a divine standard, how else do you measure and weigh factors like this? So what we're going to do today is something we talked about a little bit last time. This time, there's, again, a lot of information, so we're going to try to condense it. But we have our same chart last time, and we're going to plot on this framework how to parse some of these ideas. So if God revealed the Torah at Sinai, so this is going to be 2448 in the Hebrew calculation from when we left Sinai, he's going to give both the written Torah and the oral, all the explanation, all the tradition that's going to go with that. It's going to be passed down over the course of 40 luminaries, 40 authorities on the Torah, till the conclusion of the Talmud with Ravina and Rav Ashi. So Babylonia, 5th century, you're going to close the Talmud. So, there are actually, yes.
Can you differentiate between, is this a case where you're not in the area and you're inserting yourself versus going to help somebody that you see right in front of you? So, I don't know, a mugging or something, like, shouldn't we go help that person even though we put them at risk?
Well, that's good. So this is the question I want to get to. Yes, that's what I want to get to. In actuality, there really is no difference as a matter of principle, because whether I see it or I know that it's happening, in theory, I should be able to make a difference. So let's pick it up right there. So the Talmud, so we're here in the 5th century, the Talmud has a principle on one hand. The Talmud teaches us, based on a verse, one of the verses that appears in the Chumash, the verse goes like this, V'chai bohem, which literally is translated as, you should live with them. So what does that mean?
It's an obligation to live.
That's right. There's an obligation. So the Talmud teaches us in Tractate Yoma, the Talmud teaches us that a person is obligated to preserve their life, and anyone in this context, we're talking about Jews, any Jewish person's life, even at the expense of other prohibitions. So, if you could think of what is one of the most important principles and observances in all of Judaism, you would say Shabbos. And even Shabbos, which is such a supreme value, is set aside in cases of what we call pikuach nefesh, because the Talmud offers several different options as to what that is, but the conclusion of the Talmud is it's going to be learned from this principle called v'chai b'hem. You must live with the commandments. And that means, if God forbid somebody has a health scare on Shabbos, they should treat that health scare, generally speaking, the same way on Saturday that they would on a Tuesday. If on a Tuesday you would call your doctor, on a Saturday you call the doctor. If on a Tuesday you would go to the emergency room, on a Shabbos you go to the emergency room. V'chai b'hem. So that's on the one side. That's number one. Number two, in addition, the Talmud teaches us in Maseches Bava Metzia, there's a debate between two of the great sages of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah we have here on our chart is going to be in the 3rd century. So one of these sages is Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva says, what happens when you have a conflict between my v'chai b'hem, my responsibility, and
somebody else's?
So let's say, for example, Cecilia, can I have that for a second?
Yes.
No, you keep it. It's yours.
No, you can
let's
have
it. No. It's your cup of coffee. Let's say we're the case in the Talmud that you're probably familiar with. We're in the desert. You have one cup of coffee. So the Talmud says, what happens should Cecilia keep the one cup of coffee, drink it, and by drinking it, you'll be able to make it to safety? Or should we share the cup of coffee and then we won't make it to safety? So the Talmud says, Chayecha Kodmim.
Oh, your life first.
Your life comes first. And therefore, you keep the coffee, you drink it,
and
you save yourself.
Emphasizing it, that's only if you can't.
Obviously, we can't
share.
Exactly. Oh, so these are two. These are two extreme cases, obviously. But let's just plot the chart here. So on the one hand, we say I have to preserve my own life, and I have to preserve my own life even if that means that somebody else will die, but I've got to preserve my own life. Now, obviously, as you said, if I can preserve my own life and save somebody else's, that's great. But what about the other pole? So there is a passage in the Talmud in Sanhedrin. So the Gemara says in Masechah Sanhedrin, so let's say I'm walking along, I'm walking along on McCormick Boulevard, and I see on McCormick, there's the river, there's the Chicago River, the north branch of the Chicago River. And I see, God forbid, somebody is struggling in the water. The Talmud says, and there are several different reasons for this, in addition to obviously the principle called Hashavas Aveda, returning a lost object, just like obviously you see somebody's lost pair of pants or their wallet, you have to return it to them. Obviously you have to return their life if their life is in danger. The Talmud says even more than that, Lo Samod Al Dam Reyecha. So that pasuk, that verse appears in the Chumash, but it's developed in the Talmud teaching us that you may not stand by when somebody else's life is in danger. So here we have this principle of Lo Sa'amod, do not stand on Dam Reyecha, your brother's blood. Yes. You see someone whose life is in danger, you save them. Now obviously, here too, it depends on your skill level. Not everybody is capable of saving lives. Nobody would want me to be in charge of their medical intervention. You know what I'm saying? But there are people who can do that. So to the whatever extent. So let's say you see somebody who's in trouble. So you call 911. You call Hatzalah. You reach out to somebody. That's fulfilling this responsibility of not standing by. Lo samad al dam reyecha. Do not stand by when somebody else is in danger. So here's the problem that we're facing. The problem that we're facing is that these two principles are starting to conflict with each other. Because in theory, Lo Samad Al Dam Reyecha means I can stand on the side of the road, throw the person a life preserver, and that's fine. Or let's say a person's a physician. So somebody comes into the office and they can, they can provide whatever medical assistance they do to that patient. It doesn't come at any risk. But what happens when the Lo Samad Al Dam Reyecha now conflicts with V'chai Bahem? Because when the person comes to Rav Oshri, he says, but wait a minute, of course Lo Samad Al Dam Reyecha, but now my V'chai Bahem is at risk. My ability to stay alive is being jeopardized by this question. You hear the dilemma? This is a big dilemma.
Like,
yeah?
I feel like we hear so often that this contemplates itself out within the Nazi camps. Like, do you jump in and help knowing that you'll also be killed?
Right. Exactly. And that subtle distinction that you just mentioned, killed versus punished versus, like, that's going to be very important. Because let's say you have the following conundrum or the following challenge. Somebody says to you, you have to give up your life, otherwise we're going to kill somebody else. So usually we say that v'chai b'hem, you stay alive at all costs, except for the three cardinal challenges, the three cardinal behaviors of gilui arayos, which are for particular types of prohibited intercourse, actual idol worship, or murder. So if somebody comes to me and says, I have to kill somebody else, so then we would say, I have to take the bullets. But if they say, we're going to kill them if you don't do something, then maybe then it's totally different because I'm not actually killing them. The Gemara has an expression, who says that their blood is redder than yours or your blood is redder than theirs? So what happens when you've got this in-between case? This is the crux of the issue. And what's fascinating about this question, interestingly, is that it is not resolved. Now, I want to explain something about this, which is, I'm speaking out of turn now.
I'm going to take my question.
Good. But I want to take a step back, and I think that it is interesting to me, as an outside observer, as a student of Jewish learning, that certain questions become clear and resolved, and there's a consensus around them, and certain questions remain ambiguous. And without overstepping my wearing my legal cap, I cannot help but note that it can't be accidental that God, in the way that he, with a capital H, guides the system of Jewish law, allows or even directs that this particular question remains a mystery. Because what you'll notice is that there are different responses to this question, but that ambiguity allows for different practices within a halachic tent. So that's just an interesting observation. Most questions that emerge, especially questions that are already emerging in Talmudic times, most of the time, or much of the time, you have consensus, but not here. Here there's not so much consensus, which is why even when it comes to organ donation, now I think there's more consensus in the recent years, donating kidneys and such, but there was not a consensus 40 or 50 years ago about that, and part of that is the greater, you know, medical advances that we have, that thank God you could take care of people better than they could half a century ago. But it's interesting that it's not so simple. You know why it's not so simple? Because the Talmud does not itself resolve this contradiction. There is a case, we talked last time about this, in the, not the Babylonian Talmud that we've been quoting until now, the Talmud Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud. The Jerusalem Talmud, so that's parallel slightly to the Talmud in the Babylonian period, but slightly earlier. So you're talking, let's say, 4th century. In the Jerusalem Talmud, last time when we dealt with the issue of handing over individuals, we quoted a passage from the same Jerusalem Talmud just earlier on the page. There we were talking about handing over one person to save others. Later, the Jerusalem Talmud tells the story of Rabbi Imi. That's the man's name. Rabbi Imi Itzid Besifsefe. He was caught for some episode and was going to be killed. So two of the great sages, we spoke about them last time, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, they weighed in on this case of Rabbi Imi. Rabbi Yochanan had an expression. He said, pull out the shrouds. That's what he said. Rabbi Imi, somebody WhatsApp David Jacobson, we need to make some arrangements. It's over. Game over. And Reish Lakish says, no. Maybe, he says, ad da'ana kotil miktol. Reish Lakish says, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to rescue him. And if before he gets killed, I get killed, so be it. Now, happens to be Reish Lakish before he became someone who is embracing Talmud study, the Gemara describes, he grew up in a rough neighborhood and he was a gangster. So he probably was more equipped to deal with gangsters than other people. But l'chora, seemingly, this argument between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is exactly the argument that we're talking about. Rabbi Yochanan says, Rabbi Imi is in a precarious situation, but if I'm going to go in there and try to rescue him, I'm going to risk my life. And I'm not going to do that, so I'm calling in the shrouds. Whereas Reish Lakish said, no, I am prepared to risk my life to save him. So then the question becomes, how do you rule on this? So usually you follow the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, who in the Talmud, the traditional view is that Rabbi Yochanan's stature is greater. That's Rabbi Yochanan's opinion. And this argument is picked up when we move through our timeline, through the 5th century, all the way till the 12th century with Maimonides, Maimonides, this authoritative code, he adds a commentary on the side, which we mentioned last time, authored by Rabbi Yosef Karo in the 16th century, called Kesef Mishnah. And the Kesef Mishnah says, aha, I have a Talmud Yerushalmi. He quotes it from a Hagos Maimoni, which we're not going to talk about. And he says, well, the end of the Gemara, even though Rabbi Yochanan was the greater of the sages, the end of the Yerushalmi, who got the last word? Reish Lakish. And what did Reish Lakish say? I'm going in.
May I ask a question?
Yes, in one second. I just want to finish this piece on the Yerushalmi. So, according to Reish Lakish, according to the Kesef Mishnah, according to Rabbi Yosef Karo in the 16th century, one would be obligated to risk their life to save somebody else. Because Reish Lakish said, I'm gonna jump in there.
Does that make it an obligation, or does it make it like hard to do it?
Good. It seems, certainly the way that the Kesef Mishnah quotes from the Hagos Maimoni, which is one of the Rishonim in the period of Ashkenaz, after the Tosfos, it seems that they understand that it is an obligation. Mm-hmm. It's an obligation. What's the logic? The logic will be, wait a second, let's go back to our two values. You have a Chai Bahem, and you have Lo Samad Al Dam Reyecha. Well, Lo Samad Al Dam Reyecha, is that a questionable situation, or is that a guarantee? This person's life, the other person, Rabbi Emin, or whoever it is.
But you don't know that.
Well, I know that person, their life is in danger. The patient, the kidney donation recipient is waiting. The doctors are telling them they're going to die if they don't get it. And these Jews who were captured in so many instances, they knew what was going to happen to them. It's absolute dam reyecha. Their blood is literally at stake. So this is a guarantee. For Chai Bahem, of course, you have to have self-preservation. But is it a guarantee? Rav Ashri is asking himself, will he guarantee that Mr. Iskowitz is going to be killed? No. So that is one view. The problem is, or not the problem, the wrinkle is, this is the Kesef Mishnah quoting it from the Talmud Yerushalmi through the Hagos Maimoni. But the Maimonides, Rambam himself, doesn't quote it.
Wait, say that again.
Maimonides doesn't quote this Talmud Yerushalmi.
How does he possibly do it?
That's the thing. Doesn't say. Doesn't say. So the question is, why not? Why does Maimonides not accept this ruling? Why doesn't Maimonides, is the code of Jewish law, is going to include everything. The Rambam tells you all you need is the biblical canon, the Tanakh, and my book, and you have everything that you need. He does not quote this Yerushalmi. So many later authorities, and this is the discussion that Rav Oshri has when he tells this story, it's the first responsum in the second volume of Mima Makim. It's a very long responsum. But he says, you know why? Because the Babylonian Talmud disagrees. And he marshals some proofs that our more authoritative Talmud, the Babylonian Talmud, disagrees. And then this becomes a further discussion. This same Rav Yosef Karo quotes this Yerushalmi. He quotes it in his commentary in the Kesef Mishnah on the Rambam, but he does not quote it in the Shulchan Aruch, in the set table which codifies the laws. So in the bottom of the commentary, in the Pesachei Tshuva, in the end of Choshen Mishpat, in the section that deals with laws of monetary interactions and all kinds of things, the end of Choshen Mishpat, the Pesachei Tshuva quotes it. And he says, there's a big machlokas, a huge argument. Which is why, at the end of the day, this somewhat remains unresolved. He does not paskin this din. Doesn't paskin it. So the Pesachei Tshuva says, what? The Agudas Ezov, he quotes it. So that if you look, if you go now further, so let's say Rav Yosef Karo in the Shulchan Aruch is in the 16th century. There is another Shulchan Aruch which was authored. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, was the founder of the Lubavitch movement, the Chabad movement, Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi. So he's living at the end of the 18th century, and he quotes this question, and he says, there are two opinions. His kind of intuition, where is he leaning? He's leaning more toward not obligating. Why? Because when you have a doubt about a loss of life, you have to be extra cautious. And in elsewhere, in Or HaChaim, he says that it's not appropriate. So
obligated or prohibited?
So he's leaning toward the idea that it's not proper at all. That's what he says in Or HaChaim. So Rav Ovadia Yosef, in this tshuva, was asked about kidney donation. So first he quotes Rav Yitzchak Yaakov Weiss in the Minchas Yitzchak, who prohibited kidney donation because he said, you're going to risk your own life. It's more consistent with the Kesef Mishnah's quotation of the Yerushalmi, consistent with Reish Lakish. It's the opposite. It's going to be consistent with the Rambam, with the Bavli, not in favor of the Kesef Mishnah, because it's not quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. But then, Rav Ovadia has a really interesting wrinkle, in addition, where he disagrees with the Rav Yitzchak Yaakov Weiss, and he has an important factor, which is then going to play out in some of these cases. Says Rav Ovadia, and this is what I think is probably the most interesting nuance, is that it depends on the type of risk.
Type of risk?
He says, let's say you have a risk that's more than 50% chance that you will lose your life. So he says, then you can argue that that is already in the category of majority. I'm using that terminology of Rove. He says, more than 50% chance, 50% chance or more. So then, wait a second. If we go back to the original V'chai Bahem, you don't have to give up your own life to save somebody else's life if you're not being asked to murder them. So Rav Ovadia says, in that case, you would not be allowed, he thinks, to introduce that type of danger to yourself. In general, a person is...
Rav Ovadia says that?
Yeah. He says, you would not be allowed. He says, however, he says, let's say you have a lower level of danger. It's not a 50% danger. It's a lower level of danger. Now, this issue about a lower level of danger is also very interesting in general in the context of halacha. He's drawing this from one of the early Sephardic commentators on the Rambam and a very important Egyptian scholar. His name is Rav David Ibn Zimra. So he's living here just around the same time as Rav Yosef Karo. Rav Yosef Karo is living in Sfat. This is Rav David Ibn Zimra. So first of all, the Radvaz living in Cairo, he was asked about, no worries, he was asked about a very difficult case where someone was faced with the following dilemma. They said to a person, here's what we're going to give you, the following scenario. We're going to have you either we cut off your arm, or we're going to kill your next door neighbor. Are you obligated to give up your limb so that the other person doesn't die? And the Radvaz said, no, you're not obligated. So the Radvaz, Rav Ovadia mentions a few tshuvas from this Radvaz, Rav David Ibn Zimra, a very important commentator. So he thinks that it depends, as Rav Ovadia builds this off the Radvaz, that it depends on the level of risk. It says, based on the Radvaz, let's say it's not 50%, it's a much lower risk. If it's a much lower risk, then you get into the area where not only is it not prohibited, but maybe it should be obligated. And so this is where Rav Ovadia lands. He says, La halacha, it is permitted and a mitzvah to donate your kidney to save somebody else. And hopefully the merit of doing that will be a protection for the person, and Hashem will watch out. However, he says only with, obviously with mumchim, with experts, to make sure that the person's not putting themselves in excessive risk. The question of what is negligible risk and what is excessive risk is extremely complicated. Usually, when we think about percentages and risks, we like to use 50% as a threshold, and then we'll use another threshold, let's say miyot hamatsui, a common risk. That would be, let's say, 10%, according to the Mishkanos Yaakov and according to many. But now, in medicine and in other circumstances, sometimes it's difficult to pinpoint that. And exactly what is the risk? This question about risk is part of a much larger discussion, not for today, in other medical scenarios where somebody wants to undergo one type of risk so that they can have a benefit. So if the risk is very negligible, then we would embrace that to have some major health benefit. But let's say they want a health intervention, but the risk of that health intervention is enormous, so that could be problematic. So this idea of weighing risk is very important in other areas of medical halacha, but Rav Avadya's point is that he thinks that we should not accept Rabbi Weiss's ruling and that we should allow kidney donation, even encourage it for those who are prepared to do it, because the risk is low enough. So where do we land on this? Is that on the one end, you would have those like Rabbi Weiss who would say you're not allowed to endanger yourself. On the other hand, you would have those who would say you are permitted or encouraged, or if you go extreme with the Yerushalmi, with that Hagos Maimoni, or even obligated. So the way that Rav Oshri lands was in that situation, they felt that they knew the reality that was, you know, in front of them in this situation in Lithuania, was that it wasn't, God forbid, suicide for Mr. Iskowitz to go and reach out to the Lithuanian collaborators. There was some level of risk, but maybe not an enormous level of risk. Now, he doesn't use those terms and this exact language of how much risk. That's more of Avadya's terminology. But he says that they concluded that it was permitted and a mitzvah. And in the end, this is exactly what happened. Now, unfortunately, it seems that both Rabbi Grzynski and Mr. Iskowitz, Rabbi David Iskowitz, neither of them survived. But this is the way of thinking about this type of question and this type of ethical dilemma. Is that, and it goes back to what you said before, Mickey, if this is a futile effort, then it's no longer in this calculus of v'chai b'hem versus lo samon adam re'echa, life preservation versus standing idly by. Then it goes into the discussion that we've had elsewhere about Rav Menachem Zemba and the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising and extenuating circumstances and other types of calculus, halachic calculus. But if it's not that type of extreme, then it seems that it's going to become more of a question of permitted rather than prohibited or obligated, which is why in different circumstances you see different people react in different ways. You may have the same situation, two different people will react differently, and they're both legitimate in their halachic, moral, and ethical standings. You may have the same person faced with two different scenarios and have two different responses just based on the way that they are assessing the situation and how they feel about it. So this is a ton of information, but what we're seeing, what I want to really draw out, is how these rabbis and regular plain folks who were living at that time were dealing with this halachic traditional argument and issue in real time. And when you look through the issues that Rabbi Oshri is laying out in his paper, in his responsum, obviously he predates Rabbi Avadya Yosef in some of these sources, but he's quoting the classical sources, and the big issue which is going to keep coming up is this question of vadai, certainty, versus suffek, doubt. And that when you have something which is not certainly going to risk or endanger your life, it may endanger your life, then you're going to lean more toward, if not obligating, but permitting. And that's why many times people were willing to risk their own lives for the purpose of saving others. Questions, comments, observations. 1, 2, and 3.
I have two questions. Not, you know, even if it wasn't a threat, if you don't do this, I'm going to kill you. You know.
Yeah.
So,
I think it's a really important point. So the question kind of is, how does this relate to the whole idea of being an upstander? And I think the point is that, number one, it's wrong for us to judge people who lived in a different time in a different place. And so for people who didn't stand up, who are we to judge? You know, I think what this discussion shows is that there's actually a broad spectrum of views and latitude for people. Because if somebody, especially this is true when it comes to medical halacha questions in general, if somebody is a more nervous person, then the halacha will guide them to be more conservative. So if you had somebody who was living in a Holocaust era, and by definition, they were a nervous type of person, the very conservative type of person. So we're going to go and judge them now and say, you know, you should have really been the leader of the protest movement. You should have joined the partisans. Like, it's not fair to say that to them in retrospect 75, 85 years later. Because maybe for them, they saw this calculus of Lo Samad al Dam Reyecha, but the Vachai Bahem, they saw it as two equal dangers. And for them, they experienced it in the same level of danger. And so rather, the way that I interpret this is, okay, the same way that I look at, and I know at least two people in my circle of life who have donated a kidney. Now, I don't look at all the other people, myself included, and say, what's wrong with you? How come you didn't donate a kidney? But I look at those people and I say, wow, they're really extraordinary. They have done something that maybe it's not something that I am doing or would do, but I think that it's, like Rav Ovadia's Lashon, is that it is a tremendous mitzvah, and it's beautiful, and it's inspiring. And so we want to encourage people, I think, to be upstanders to the level that maybe it pushes them a little bit out of their comfort zone, right? This idea of how much risk are you willing to take? Well, if we're very, very motivated by Lo Samad al Dam Reyecha, we really care, so then we're going to be upstanders out of our comfort zone. Now, if that means that we're going to risk our life, maybe not. But especially when you have your students who are coming up, are they risking their life by being an upstander today? No. They are just risking maybe their social... most of the time, they're not. Most of the time, they might be risking their social capital in their fifth grade class. They might be risking their friends. They might be risking their status. Most of the time, unless you're an IDF reservist, when you volunteer to be an upstander, you're not actually risking your life. So I would say this discussion is about actual physical danger.
They were certainly risking their life because yes, were there.
Yes.
So is there a possible way to look at it that says, no, you shouldn't have?
So that's what I'm saying. According to Rabbi Weiss, he might have argued more in the direction of don't risk your life. Again, these are always questions in hindsight. But the point is that these are the different feelings and the different issues exactly at hand. Yeah.
So, two points. One is, I haven't
been to
the question of
upstanders.
It's not just...
Yeah, this just on that point, I think Genovese, I think, was her name.
Right,
this famous case, right? So, in that context, this woman was being assaulted in New York City. You just have to call the police, right, to be an upstander. There's no risk involved. So, yeah, so being an upstander, yes. Yeah, I agree with that. I would say one point, just yes and... how complicated in these kinds of situations it is, you never know whether or not your attempt, the same way that a doctor who goes to perform a medical procedure, you never know. So what's interesting that from a halachic perspective, the trying is what counts. And I'll explain to you what I mean. Let's say you are you're going to be an upstander and you're going to volunteer and you're going to try to save somebody's life. Even if you don't succeed, it is considered that you are doing the act of saving their life. So I heard the following case, and with this we'll close because it's getting really late. Dr. Abraham S. Abraham, one of the great medical halachic authorities of our time, once came to YU, and I went to hear him speak. And he told us the following fascinating ruling from the late Gaon, the giant of Torah, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. There was an incident in which there was somebody who was on Shabbos in a health crisis. So someone called to get medical intervention. People should come and help. So they called somebody, and that person was in a different neighborhood. So the person was driving on their way to help this person whose life was in danger. In the meanwhile, lo and behold, a doctor happens to show up on the scene unexpectedly and is able to administer life-saving support for this sick patient. So the question arose, is it appropriate now to telephone the physician who's on their way driving on the Sabbath? And when a person drives on the Sabbath, that means they are doing some of the actual biblical violations, or not? Should they tell them, don't come, don't bother, don't drive? Because so what did Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach rule? He ruled that you should not call them. Why not? He said, because by calling on the telephone, you are violating the Sabbath. Albeit rabbinically. But when that person is driving, they're not violating the Sabbath. Why not? Because he's coming to save a life. Even though in reality, the life has already been saved. So this is the point that you're making. If you are engaged in Hatzolas Nefashos, if you're trying to do the Lo Samad Al Dam Reyacha, if you're trying to do the Hashava Saveda, that goof of Shlomo Zalman said, that is the mitzvah, the trying. So it's true, God is going to take care of the result, and whether or not it's going to be successful. Look, in the end, in this case, like so many other cases where people were upstanders and they did try, and unfortunately, we know in the Holocaust how many 9 out of 10 plus cases, how it resolved. But that doesn't matter, because being that upstander, that's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is being the upstander. You're not responsible for the result. God is responsible for the result. So whether or not it accomplishes or doesn't accomplish what we think, but by being that upstander, by doing that action, that's the mitzvah of Losamad Al Dam Re'echa, that in and of itself. So this passage of the Yerushalmi is picked up by some rabbinic authorities, but not by our, what we would call, main traditional codes. So it's not in Maimonides' Yad HaChazaka, it's not in Rav Yosef Karo's Shulchan Aruch, which is why there is so much ambiguity, because yes, it's an authoritative source, and it keeps making appearances. So in this volume, and I'll really, really close with this, in this collection of sources, this is Vasnei Nenuukola, an essay from Yecheskel Shraga Lichtenstein, he quotes lots of different authorities over the course of the years that quote and don't quote this Yerushalmi and other related sources. There's a lot more to say about this.